This is Junk Food Cinema.
Hi, this is Dick Miller. You're listening to Junk Food Cinema on Film School Rejects. Who are these guys?
All you happy campers, and welcome to another exciting episode of Junk Food Cinema right here on FilmSchoolRejects.com.
Dot tent.
I love how you just, I'd been just throwing that out recently as a joke, and now you're just waiting on it, and it's like, oh shit.
Because, have you, I don't know if you listened to the show that we do, Cargill, but we've started putting the old Expedia, like, jingle at the end, so it's like, I say .com, you say .com, and then it goes, .com.
I did not know that.
And literally, people have been like messaging us on Twitter.
To this show. Are you
I know,
kidding
fuck
me?
This show, right? People have been messaging us on Twitter and being like, "That's my favorite joke, my favorite running joke of the whole show." And I'm like, "Someone else's jingle is your favorite running joke of our
entire." Thank you, guys.
That actually makes a ton of sense. Hey, this is the Weekly Cult and Exploitation Filmcast. So good, it just has to be improved by other people's jingles. I'm Brian Salisbury. He is C. Robert Cargill. He's a novelist, a screenwriter, and he has a book out right now.
Yeah, Sea of Rust. I hope you like it.
Sea of Rusty Trombones is the porn version.
No, God, no. Why did you put that in my head? Fuck you. Fuck you.
That's like the 57th worst thing that has been said on this show is Sea of Rusty Trombones. If you would like to hear the other 56 worst things we've ever said, you can go to iTunes. You can go to our entire back catalog on Blog Talk Radio, which is our network and our home at the moment.
At the moment.
No, I don't know why I said that.
I don't know why either. I was like, wait, they've been awesome.
We're moving to our own. We're going to broadcast out of a shack in the middle of West Texas. Don't worry about it. We're going to make it work, Cargill.
I feel like we're the shack from One Crazy Summer.
More than likely.
Where we're like listening to the radio, hoping to win the contest.
And it could be right now, but it's not. Yeah, no, that's definitely where we're headed. You can also, like I said, you can follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema. You can like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. And if you really like the show, I mean, you Sally Field really like this podcast, you can go to patreon.com/junkfoodcinema. And for as little as $1 a month, you can get a slew of bonus content that only you get to hear.
New content every week.
New content every week. And there's we've been talking about some exciting new things that might be coming down the pike. So definitely stay tuned for that. And the other great thing about doing that is that you keep the lights on here at Junk Food HQ. You keep us in beers. And you keep us in Chocodiles, because eventually...
You say us, but like the one thing that I mention every once in a while is I don't make anything off
that's
the podcast.
Yeah.
I do this because I love to sit around and drink beers with my buddy and talk about movies with you folks. And this helps you not have to have a second job so that you can actually show up weekly and do this with me and then take the time to get it all put together. Like, putting together a podcast is not as simple as just sitting on your couch and talking for an hour, unless you're me. And just refuse to do anything else and then thus not take any of the money. Like, literally, you guys are helping Brian not have to have a second job and allowing this to be his second job.
Yeah.
And that's really fucking cool of you guys. And we love you. And seriously, we love all of your support. And thank you so much. And of course, you know, we do a mailbag episode every other week where you guys get to ask us the questions that you've been sitting there going, but what do they think about this? Or who would they fan cast for that? And we answer your questions.
Or what is the size of their this? Or how often do they wash their that? Like, so many questions, inappropriate or otherwise, that we will answer for you on the mailbag, which you will have one this very week. So definitely sit tight for that. Schlocktober, motherfucker! Schlocktober 2!
I'm so excited. This has been on my short list. Since before we started Summer of 87, I really wanted to do this. We jumped into Summer of 87 early because it was such a big summer.
Yeah.
And I have been wanting to do this movie. And when you were like, hey, can we do this? I was like, yes!
Yeah.
I have been evangelizing for this film.
You have been. I remember when you first started talking about it, what was crazy to me is like, how have I heard of this movie? How does this movie, how is this stuck in my head? And then I went home that night and started looking, like, and I remember it was shortly after I had moved, and I started going through my Blu-rays and putting them back on the shelf, and I'm like, oh, because I fucking own this movie on Blu-ray, thanks to Scream Factory. That's how I know this movie.
And I'm going to tell you guys right now, whatever you do, do not watch the trailer for this movie.
No, 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 no.
The trailer
no.
for this movie makes it look like it's an alien invasion monster movie. And it's like, what the actual fuck? How did they cut this together to make it like this? When instead it is something significantly cooler.
It's very cool. It's very weird. It is very lost to the ages. And I'm so happy to get to talk about
it. It's the final terror.
Da 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 da.
Da 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 da.
All I can tell you is it's wild, it's practically untouched, and you're gonna love it. It's really beautiful.
There is nothing to be afraid of.
They wouldn't have left us up here all night if there wasn't something wrong.
Your friends aren't really missing. They're not really dead. This is just some kind of joke.
What the hell was that?
That thing that's out there, whatever it is, can't be real. It's just your imagination.
I swear I'm not dreaming! I'm not dreaming!
Or maybe, just this once, you're dead wrong. The Final Terror.
Yeah, okay, so here is what you have to know about this movie, and we're going to go into this. This is a movie that is, this is more advanced level movie love.
Mm-hmm,
like,
mm-hmm,
this mm-hmm. is not a movie that you can just show to any of your friends and say, you got to check out this crazy movie. In fact, this is a movie I only recommend for hardcore horror buffs, because this movie is the slasher movie version of Jazz.
Yes.
Because in Jazz, as is the, you know, what people often talk about, it's not just about the notes you play, it's about the notes you choose not to play.
So in this case, you have to look at the shots they're not getting.
Well, it's not just that. It's that this is a movie made by Andrew Davis. Now, Andrew Davis is an accomplished director who gave us a lot of great stuff from the 80s and 90s.
Including, I think his crowning achievement being The Fugitive.
Yeah, absolutely his crowning achievement is The Fugitive. But he also did something that I know you love, Under Siege.
By the way, take a drink for that. Take a drink for Code of Silence, possibly the only truly great Chuck Norris movie.
Lone Wolf McQuaid and Invasion USA would have something to say about that. But Code of Silence is legitimately great.
Yes.
Above the Law is the movie that gave us Steven Seagal as an action hero.
Yep.
The Package, I think, is a great underrated Gene Hackman film.
1,000%.
And then, of course, he did some crazy stuff like Chain Reaction.
And Collateral Damage.
The really poorly timed Collateral Damage. Like, Collateral Damage is a movie that really got dinged by coming out shortly after
9/11. And by the way, Holes, which I think is a Holes very is underrated movie.
Yeah. So, like, Andrew Davis has done some great stuff. And then he has The Guardian, which is a great film until it becomes an awful film. It becomes the origin of Aquaman, or actually becomes the origin of Kevin Costner's character in Waterworld. No, The Guardian is literally a movie that's really, really good and ends at this barbecue. And then there's like 20 more minutes of movie and you're like, wait, what's happening? And then this really good movie that you just enjoyed goes downhill so fast that it's unreal. But this is a movie that the reason I mention all this is this is a movie.
Okay. You've said this is a movie is about a movie. 22 times. The new drinking game for Junk Food Cinema. Every time Cargill says, this is a movie.
This is a movie.
All about Hal.
That is clearly made by a young director who is tired of the type of movies that he has been hired to make and decide. And he's so sick of the tropes. He's so sick of the cliches. Like, this is 1983 that this movie came out. This is a movie that is on the tail end of how tired everyone fucking is with slasher movies. 1981, there were 31 or 32 slasher movies released in theaters. 82, another spate followed. And this is 83 when audiences are just like, oh, fuck, another slasher movie. And what Andrew Davis did was go, I'm going to do everything that these movies don't do. And he creates a super smart, razor sharp, really interesting anti-slasher movie.
Yeah.
This is a movie that you look at it and you're like, oh, this is a slasher movie. And it's like, no, this is a movie about deconstructing the slasher movie at a time that nobody wanted anyone to deconstruct a slasher movie.
Well, and even more so, Andrew Davis is fed up with the genre because this movie was actually made in 1981 and sat on a shelf until 1983.
Oh,
so very early in the slasher craze, Andrew Davis was fucking fed up with it. And what he gives us is a movie that utilizes the tropes, but it utilizes them in a way to pull you into the notion and the comfortable acceptance of, oh, I know exactly what this movie is, just so that he can pull a 180 on you and go, no, you don't know what this movie is.
Yeah. And hey, by the way, what would happen? And this is what this movie is. It is asking what would happen if a bunch of sensible, reasonable, smart people ended up in a fucked up situation and then did everything right.
Yeah.
Because that's what starts to
happen.
Everything
right based on the information that they had, which is all the information that you would have if you were in a traditional slasher movie, which we revealed to you in the third act, you are absolutely not.
Yeah, it is fucking batshit. It is gloriously batshit. But where this movie won me over, like I was watching it, and it's a bit over the top at times, and it's a little goofy at times. And then there is this point where two of our characters have been murdered in the woods in a classic, classic fucking straight out of Friday the 13th scene in which two of our camp counselors, if you will, are fucking and get murdered in mid-coitus. And it's like, oh, this is what this movie is. And then once our characters, the rest of our characters, discover that's what's going on, nobody is allowed to go to the bathroom alone.
Yep.
Nobody, I'm going to go off, I'm just taking a leak. No, nobody goes alone. Like, all of a sudden, instincts kick in. And as it turns out, we have this character that I swear to Christ came back from Nam. I swear that they with casting, they trimmed out little bits and pieces of it. But this is a guy who is a damaged Vietnam vet who's seen some shit. And he's like, no, this is how we fucking deal with this, which is why he wigs out the way he does.
Which is really funny because about halfway through this movie, I thought they were being stalked by John Rambo. Like, I thought this movie was, if you did First Blood as a horror movie, where the cops are campers. Like, essentially, that's the kind of shit that starts happening in this film.
Yeah. And it's crazy, but it's so entertaining. So let's begin at the beginning.
A good place to start.
With the most nonsensical part of this movie, the cold open, with a death scene that never has anything to fucking do with the movie.
Two people stroll into this, into the final terror from a completely different film and are like, yeah, I guess we have time to get killed, as the cold open of a different movie.
The only thing that ties it to them is that they are murdered by sharpened
peach can lids.
Yeah, like that's literally like, it's like, oh when I go back and I've seen the movie, oh yes, it's the peach cans, oh I see, that's actually really smart. But that's the only connection. Like, otherwise those murders don't play into this movie. It's literally just the cold open to be like, hey, you're watching a slasher film. Now watch 20 minutes of Joe Pantoliano chew up all the fucking scenery.
Gonna chew it up and spit it out, you fucking asshole.
If you love Joey Pants,
as you like fucking
we
should.
All love Joey Pants. If you love Joey Pantoliano, you have to see this movie, because as the crazy bus driver in this movie, he is giving a performance like he never has given since. Like, he is so crazy, he is so obnoxious, he is so over the top, but in all the ways that work and make him a delightful red herring and entertain the fuck out of you every time he's on screen and creates a real agitation within this group of people, he's amazing.
Yeah.
I am floored every time I watch it that this is the subtle, quiet Joe Pantoliano that we've seen in so many great films. And even when he's big in other movies, he's never as big as this. And I'm like, where the fuck has that guy been for almost 40 years? Like, that is a Joe Pantoliano I want to see again. Yeah. Like, that is just so, he goes for it. He's like, I'm a young actor. I'm, you know, I've finally gotten a role in a fucking movie. I'm going for it. And holy shit, does he go for it. By the way, other actors we need to mention that are in this.
Also appearing in this film. This is the time for our favorite segment. Also appearing in this film.
Adrian Zemed.
This movie, the reason it was pulled from obscurity from its 2-year stint on the shelf was because of the, quote, rise in popularity of Adrian Zemed, which makes sense because, Cargill, you might know this. What happened between 1981 and 1983 involving Adrian Zemed?
Grease 2.
And the premiere of a television show.
That's right.
Called TJ motherfucking Hooker.
That's right. I forgot he was in TJ Hooker.
TJ Hooker hits the airwaves like a fucking nuclear bomb.
Yeah, in April of 1982. Something I know because I was listening to our sister podcast,
80s All Over. Also, which, how I know this.
Which also mentioned TJ Hooker. By the way, if you're listening to us and you're not listening to 80s All Over yet,
you're doing it wrong.
Go fucking listen to 80s All Over. One episode every 2 weeks. You can fit it into your schedule. It'll be the best hour to hour and a half of your week. That isn't us.
And also, it's like, okay, Adrian Zemed and Joe Pantoliano, that's a pretty good cast for an obscure 80s movie. I'm not fucking finished. Stop interrupting me. Because we also have
Daryl Hannah.
Very young Daryl Hannah. And we also have Mark Medcalf, better known as Niedermeyer from Animal House.
Oh, yeah.
Who gets killed while fucking in this movie.
Yes, he does.
Which I feel like the members of Animal House would have appreciated. That was not at the end of Animal House. Like, Niedermeyer killed in Vietnam. No, I'm sorry. Killed while fucking in the woods.
Yes.
That should have been the
They just said the Vietnam because they didn't want to tell the real story.
Exactly. Right away, you're like, okay, you have the director of movies like The Fugitive. You have Joe Pantoliano, Adrian Zemed, Daryl Hannah, Mark Medcalf. Like, why did this movie disappear? And I will say, there are a lot of moments in this movie where its limited budget can be palpably felt. Like, there's a lot of, we don't even have the money for lights. So a lot of this movie that takes place at night in the woods is shot in a way that's lit by someone's headlights. Like, it's just,
I love that about that. I always felt that was a direct choice because some of the cinematography in this film is so good. Like,
I agree.
There are so many shots of this forest that are so wonderful, that do such great things, that I can't help but think that this was another one of those choices where it's like, how come every woman who runs and trips through the woods is so well lit? It's the woods. Have you ever been in the woods at night? You can't see shit, so the audience shouldn't see shit. That's what would be scary.
Well, according to the IMDb, it was directly because of the budget, but maybe it's like a Jaws situation where it's like everybody praises Spielberg for his reserve and building tension by not showing the shark. And it's like, it didn't work. It was an accident. Maybe it's that kind of thing where it's like, we didn't have the money for a lot of lighting, but it also works thematically. So we'll roll with it. I mean, they even shoot that thing in the bus, which is a great scene where they're all trying to get back to the bus. And then they kind of like the one, I will say this. The one thing the low lighting does for this movie in particular is that the killer in the woods is camouflaged. Yeah. And the killer in the woods at any given point could be walking among them because of how dark it is. So there are scenes on that bus that I'm like, is that one of them? Or
there's
is that
the great
killer?
Shots in this movie where you stare at the screen for a moment and then the character in camouflage gets up. Mm-hmm. And it's like, holy shit. They were there the whole fucking time.
Gets up and slices Waldo's throat. It's like, oh, I was looking for the... Oh, okay. I guess the killer found him first. Because, yeah, it plays tricks on you. It's like, holy shit, that's moving. Oh, that's a killer. It's so well, in fact, that for, you know, having this being my first time seeing it, I thought this was a Bigfoot movie in disguise. Like, I thought this was a secret Bigfoot movie. Like, they keep talking about, like, they instantly think that Joe Pantoliano, who's their crazy bus driver, is the one doing it because he's the only one not with them. He's waiting with the bus at the end of the rapids. And just certain shots and, like, they kind of look like claws on the killer. And I'm like, holy shit, is this a Bigfoot movie in disguise? And it's not, but just going along with that was very interesting for me for a while.
Yeah. Also, one of the things I need to point out is how sharply and how smartly every bit of information about this movie is given to you.
Yeah.
Like, this movie is very smart about dropping in information and doing it in a way that seems disguised. Like, this whole thing about somebody getting shit about cans of peaches disappearing from the mess hall. And it's like just a throwaway bit that becomes a plot point later in the movie. And then the discovery of the peach cans and like, oh shit. And all the information that goes with that and all the creepy fucking shit that goes with that is really well done. The way we get the myth of the crazy woman, how we get that information set up, like all of this is so natural and never feels forced, and nobody ever gets pulled aside and explained what's going on. Everyone puts it together from the along with the audience as the information comes up. So the characters are never either ahead or behind of the audience. They're always with the audience. And I find that fascinating. I find it such a smartly written script, especially for its time, that it was so aware of everything that was going wrong in the genre. I feel like if you made a movie like this now, if you made this movie now, it would be a darling on the indie circuit. Like it
would be
play,
a Fantastic Fest movie.
It would be Fantastic Fest. It would play Fright Fest. It would be one of those movies where it's like, oh, holy shit, they really turned everything on its ear. And then it would show up, if nobody ever got behind it, it would show up as a Shudder exclusive, and it would be something that everyone's like, you gotta watch this fucking movie.
It would be a franchise, and the second one would be directed by Joe Lynch. It's very likely.
Whoa.
I'm telling you, this felt very Wrong Turn to me after a while. Like, I got shades of
you know
Wrong
what?
Turn
I'll accept
time.
That.
That's what I was referring to, is
okay.
That
it feels I thought you were taking a dig at our good friend and regular listener who's listening right now going, wait, Brian.
No, it wasn't a dig. In fact, I like Wrong Turn 2 very much, so kudos.
Joe, come back to town, do another episode with us.
Where the fuck are you? No, so I would love to see if they made a franchise out of the Final Terror. Final Terror 2 Dead End would be directed by Joe Lynch.
I'm writing that movie for Joe Lynch right now. Like, I'm typing it as I'm writing and speaking to you now.
Open on Joey Pants. I don't know why he's writing it as well, but, you know, that's how it works in my head.
Joey Pants Bus Driver. So
Joey Pants Bus Driver. Oh, my God. That's a TJ Hooker type show right there, where it's basically like if Ralph Cramden solved mysteries. It's like Joey Pants Bus Driver, and he's just driving around at night, and he's got the midnight shift, so he sees all the craziest shit, and he's solving okay, do you have network connections? I feel like we can get the show off the ground. God damn it. So we were talking about the Final Terror.
So back in the Final Terror.
This is a movie.
This is a movie. And it's a movie that I get why it failed. I get why it's been mostly forgotten. I get why a lot of people like this is a divisive film in the film community. Like, I've mentioned it to a couple of people, and I've had really prominent horror critics refer to it as interminable, refer to it as, you know, just unspeakably awful. Like, those are direct quotes. And then there are other people in the community, when I mention The Final Terror, they get all giddy and grab my arm and go, oh my God, it's so great, right? Holy shit. Like, it is that film that really catches you off guard and makes you go, oh, this is something else. Because once the murders happen, and once they start being smart, every decision they make is exactly what the audience is yelling at them to do. Go back to the bus. Get out the bus. Oh shit, the bus has been sabotaged. We can't take the bus anymore. Well, you've got boats. Why don't you go down the river? They can't get you when you're on. Oh, look, we're going to go on boats and go down the river.
It's just, this whole movie is about frustrating the one guy in the audience who thinks he knows more than the characters in the movie.
And it does that elegantly. When we get to, if you'll pardon the phrase, their final solution.
I don't know that I can pardon that particular choice of words.
you really have to this time around.
All right, fair enough.
If you can forgive that.
Under protest, I will forgive that.
The last 7 minutes of this movie are so batshit that when it happened, I instantly, and the credits rolled, I went, wait, that's the fucking end of this. No fucking way did I just see that. And went back 7 minutes and rewatched the final 7 minutes again. And I'm like, holy shit, the balls in this fucking movie. The huge fucking wheelbarrow that Andrew Davis had to carry around on set just to carry his fucking balls around.
You know, this movie went through a lot of turmoil with its titling. Like, for a while, it was just, they didn't know what to call it. It was called Three Blind Mice just because the character sang that once in the movie. Like, they didn't have a firm grasp. I feel like what you could have called it in reference to what Cargill was talking about, is elephantitis. Because, yes, the balls on Andrew Davis to do two things. One, yes, the final scene. Jesus Christ. Like, you've got big swinging nuts and big swinging on screen. The other thing that I think is extremely ballsy about this movie is Andrew Davis understands the subgenre of slasher films so well that he knows exactly what you are going to think. He knows exactly how you are going to read the movie, that he gives you the fucking answer in the first act of the movie. Just hands it to you. Here's what it is. Here's the exact thing that's killing them in the woods. All you got to do is listen, but you won't, because you know how slasher movies work. So you're going to think it's something else. That was so interesting to me that I got to the end of the movie and I'm like, this is exactly what they told me it was going to be. And I forgot about it.
Yeah.
I forgot that they handed me the answer on a silver platter.
That's what I was talking about.
And I was
about.
Too distracted by the foliage and the creepy people in the woods that I didn't think about the other creepy people in the woods.
Yeah, no, this movie gives you every bit of information. And by the end, you get a full story.
Yeah.
And it's all there. And you go back and you rewatch it and you're like, yes, there is no superfluous information in this movie. There are no red herrings. They do not actually misdirect you in any way. It's the story is told so well that you're focused on your own knowledge, which is what I love about this. Is why I call this the jazz of fucking slasher movies, because this is a slasher movie for people who have seen all the other slasher movies and think that they know this so by heart that they're just waiting to see something like, oh, I've never seen somebody killed in an original. Oh, my God. She just got a hook through her vagina and up through her stomach. Holy God. I guess that's the whole reason I watched this movie, which I'm not. That's an actual movie. That is the and a bunch of horror fans out there are going, oh, yes, I know exactly which one that is.
This is a movie.
This is a movie. And it's like, oh, yeah, that is pretty much one of the only reasons to watch that movie is for a kill that makes you wince and cry and go, oh, fuck, why did I watch this? This is a movie that it's like, no. This is entirely about you thinking you're smarter than the movie and the movie giving you the movie and then going, there you go. What do you think? And you're like, holy shit.
Do you think that's why they rested on the title, The Final Terror? Because it's Andrew Davis literally saying, I hope this is the last goddamn slasher movie I ever see.
I think it's also they felt that like in 1983, the slasher genre, the way it was dying down. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we've talked about this, about how horror went through a very weird kind of lull, and then all of a sudden we saw the rise of monsters again. Like, it came to this thing where it's like guys in masks aren't scary anymore. We don't care about Madman Mars. We don't care about, you know, Jason Voorhees, just some redneck in the woods.
Madman Mars, by the way, my favorite David Bowie song.
Oof.
As it is. It's, oof. I love it. I think it's great.
That movie's not, like...
That movie is not jazz.
I have very serious problems with Madman Mars, which is what I thought this was when I watched it. So I literally was the first time I watched it. It was on one of those nights where I'd already killed half a bottle of whiskey and my wife had gone to bed.
So it was early in the night.
Then. And no. And it's like it's like 5 a.m. and I'm like, I'm not ready to go to bed yet. Let me watch something. I don't care if it's good or not. Like, it's just, let me experiment. Like, let's just, you know, I keep seeing this Final Terror thing on Amazon Prime and on Shudder. Like, everybody's got it for free. I'll watch it and see what's up. And it just, the sun had come up at the end of the movie where it's done in daylight. And it was like the perfect timing for this movie. And it just, that ending just melted my brain. I'm like, no fucking way. And so, of course, the next day I'm like, all right, you know what? Maybe I had too much whiskey last night. Maybe I was
that's
just
something
too
I've
forgiving.
Literally never heard you say.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? You're hearing it now. And so I'm like, I need to watch this again. So I watched it about 10 o'clock at night. I'm like, I just need to watch this movie again and see if I'm out of my mind. And I'm just like, I love this fucking movie. Like, this is a movie that I can't believe I've never heard of before. And nobody's like plopped in my lap and said, Cargill, how have you not watched this? How has the Draft House not done that on a Terror Tuesday that I've heard about? Like, how is this something that has existed out here in the ether for 35 years? And I just wasn't aware that it was even a thing. And so I started evangelizing about it and started getting those disparate reactions of some, you know, either people being like, what is that? I'm like, fucking watch it. Here's what you need to know going in. And then having the people like, oh, I fucking hate that movie. And then people grabbing me excited, like I've joined their cult. Like I just told them that I found Jesus. And they're like, you found Jesus. Have you confessed and given yourself over to it?
Yeah, he's standing right over there by Waldo. Oh, God damn it. She cut his throat too. Fuck.
It's it was a very weird experience with this movie, but I feel like it is one of those rare hidden gems that people don't really realize is as smart and sharp as it is. Yeah. And it's a great look at what Andrew Davis can do with no budget, because Andrew Davis would then go on to make some really, really good big budget movies and then make some really trashy, overly budgeted movies. I don't think there needs to be a universe where Chain Reaction exists.
But see, a lot of people feel that way about Final Terror, so.
And they're wrong.
Potato, canned peaches, you know.
Yeah, it's, and maybe I, Chain Reaction, a revisit.
I've never seen it.
Oh, I saw it when it came out, and it was ridiculous junk then, but I'm curious to see if maybe there's some gem to be found in it at this point. But
that stars Breakwind Reeves, right? I believe Keanu is the Hawaiian word for breaking wind, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you are wrong. I think you're very mistaken.
I'm pretty sure I will
and
look
Morgan Freeman, for fuck's sake.
Well, I'll take a paycheck, much as the next guy.
But he made enough good movies that, especially when you watch The Fugitive.
Oh, my God.
And how many times has The Fugitive been ripped off? Oh, my God. That scene on the dam has been ripped off so many times since then. People like, you know, having conversation, then diving off the side. It's like, dude, you cannot steal from this movie, let alone steal from it that many times.
You know what my favorite movie to steal from The Fugitive is? U.S. Marshals.
Yeah. Well,
I know it's the sequel,
yeah,
but it fucking steals from itself so much. And
kind
I,
of.
I actually
sequel.
Love U.S. Marshals.
I know you do.
I think it is. It's not. No, let me stop myself. It is not underrated. It is rated exactly where it should be rated. But I fucking love it. Yeah. I will never stop loving.
But he didn't US do it. He didn't do.
No, he US didn't Marshall. Do that one. And just for those of you playing at home, Keanu is a word that means cool breeze over the mountains in Hawaiian. So kind of what I said. Kind of what I said.
Yours was warm breeze under the mountains.
This is very true. This is a name. This is a movie. And we are still talking about The Final Terror. The Final! Okay, so I'm going to have to make a confession here. And this is something that's probably going to happen a lot over the next couple years. And I'm just going to have to apologize. But as I watch movies for this show, there are quite a few occasions where as I'm watching the movie for this show, I'm also taking care of a fussy infant. So there are things that are going to fly past me and just hashtag dad fail, I guess. But what is the deal with these Rangers? Like what?
That you did not miss.
Okay.
Because this is the one thing that in terms of who they are and what they are, this is the little piece of information we're never given.
Okay, good.
They are one of two things that I can put together.
Okay.
And this is one of the big mysteries of this movie that is what is poorly presented here. These are either, in some way, shape, or form, underling Rangers, essentially probationary Rangers.
Rangers in training.
Rangers in training, going out and doing stuff, staying, getting room and board, staying here, going out and doing stuff before they move up the chain to actually become Rangers.
Before Zordon calls them up. Yeah, they're Rangers in training.
Or what I think is more appropriate. What I actually think they are is I think this is a work detail program.
See, okay.
I think these guys have been in jail for small infractions. This is why Joe Pantoliano hates them so much and fucks with them, because they're fucking ex-convict pukes.
Okay. Yes, that's the impression I got. It was very Ernest Goes to Camp. It was like a bunch of kids that are like, bust in from the problem camp across, and we're going to like take them on this outing to make better citizens of them. That being the case, why do they stop and pick up women whose parents are willingly letting these girls go with convict? That's like, I could not connect those dots.
That's where I get thrown off the rail as well on this bit of information. You didn't miss anything. This is not a dad fail.
I'm glad.
This is the movie's big failing.
This is
in terms of the writing.
It's failing. Yes.
Yeah. Because they really don't ever explain who and why they're there. And it's one of those, it's one of those things that you don't really need to know for this movie to work, but it is a little bit of information that makes, that recontextualizes things. Like, I get why the girls are there.
Well, like, I get, yeah, in the sense of you're making a slasher movie, they need to be there.
Not only that, but the fact that the adult that's in charge of those, you know, is in charge of one of those girls, and the other girls are from out of town, and they want to go out into the woods, and hey, we have a group of rangers going out into the woods, and you can go and be accompanied by rangers and actually have a hunting, a hiking trip. Hey, how great is that? And they're actually doing work, cleaning a stream, and so they're making the world a better place, and isn't this great? Like, I get why parents would be like, yeah, sure, go for the weekend out in the woods.
They just happen to be on work detail because they're fucking
But are they on work detail or not?
I don't know.
I don't know. They never say, and that's... It makes sense if they are, except for, like, yeah, what you're talking about. But then in terms of, like, if they're just rangers, why is Joe Pantoliano fucking with them so much?
And why, in the first scene, it seems like in the first scene that they're all ex-cons in a halfway house, and he's, like, an administrator. And then immediately, as soon as they get on the bus, he's the one they're fucking with all the time. Like, to the point that I feel bad for him. And it's like the first scene of this movie makes me think he's the antagonist bully. And then by the time they get on the bus, they're just doing all kinds of shit to fuck with him. And like, I had a hard time reconciling that. I'm like, is he the asshole or are they the assholes to him?
And then the other big hanging piece of information is Zorch an ex-nom vet.
Yeah.
Is he supposed to be older than he is? Did the casting undercut what that is? But he certainly... talks like he came back from Nam. Mm-hmm. He shares stories as if he was, and his instincts are of somebody who's been in some kind of shit before.
Yeah.
So it is really, they never really say, but I love that undercurrent that you, like, you get that. Like, when I mentioned that, you weren't like, oh shit, yeah, no, I didn't think about that. It's like, no, you definitely get a Nam vibe from this guy. And it was close enough to Nam that, yeah, it could have worked. But it is, they never, like, lay that out. But the movie is so subtle and precise in other ways that these two lingering pieces of information just seem to be dangling out there in a way that nothing else in this movie dangles. Because the rest of this movie is precisely put together very well. Like,
the rest of this movie
well structured.
Dangles with discipline. That's really the best thing I can say about it. Actually, the Nam element and being in the woods and sort of taking on sort of a slasher concept with Nam vets reminded me of another, what I think is a gem of a movie from the 80s called Thou Shalt Not Kill Except. Do you remember this movie?
No, I've never seen this one.
This is the movie where a bunch of vets from Nam vets are out in the woods basically taking on Charles Manson. It is a movie where Vietnam veterans are called upon to take down a bunch of murderous hippies. And one of the murderous hippies is played by, in fact, the cult leader, the Charles Manson character is played by Sam Raimi. And it's just this delightfully low-budget weirdo movie where these three Rambo types are just out there like, we're fucking fed up with hippies, which seems like a very super Reagan-y kind of thing, except that the hippies are like the Manson family. So you're totally in the corner of these vets. And it's so bug nuts insane and made for $12. And
it's so weird to watch movies in which Sam Raimi shows up as an actual actor.
Yeah.
Because it's usually a sign that it's not a good movie at all.
True story.
Like if he shows, like when he shows up in Maniac Cop, like briefly, like that is like, that's like, oh, what the fuck is he doing here? But he's just playing a reporter real quick. When he's given an actual role, it's like, oh shit.
Yeah.
This is not a good movie.
But I will say this for him in that movie. He spreads peanut butter and jelly all over the walls and proceeds to chew the scenery like it's double bubble. Like it's incredible. It is incredible to watch him work in that movie. Was he one of the only horror film directors that Mick Garris did not have nude photos of and didn't have to be in Sleepwalkers? Was he like the one guy who didn't have a fucking cameo in Sleepwalkers? Because I watched that movie recently. I'm like, what are any of you doing in this piece of shit? Like you got fucking John Landis, you got Joe Dante, you got, I believe Stephen King is like in the movie.
I'll tell you, Mick Garris is a guy that everyone in L.A. loves. And he's the one who put together Masters of Horror and puts together the Masters of Horror dinners. He is best friends with everybody.
He's probably been best
friends with everybody forever, because apparently everyone I know that knows him, I've never met him, everyone I know who knows him speaks so highly of him, like he is just one of the greatest guys on the planet.
Tell us about him, Joe. Oh, wait, that's right. You're still not here. Get back to Austin and be on our podcast again, Lynch. I'm not fucking kidding.
Oddly enough, Lynch was just speaking about Mick Garris on the Toby Hooper episode. You can go listen to, again, one of our sister podcasts.
The Movie Crypt.
Yeah, The Movie Crypt just did a Toby Hooper retrospective where they shared personal stories, and they talk about going to those Masters of Horror dinners and getting to know Toby.
Funny story, one of the other horror filmmakers in Sleepwalkers, Clive Barker, and Tobe Hooper. So, like, they're...
Toby Hooper.
All right. I said Toby for years, and people were like, excuse me, it's Tobe.
No, it's Toby.
Okay. Fuck anyone who told me it was Tobe. Fuck all
of those people.
Yeah. So yeah, I still think Mick Garris, you know, that makes more sense than my nude photos theory on principle, but I'm sticking
like,
with
like
what I said.
At this point, Sam Raimi would be like, yeah, no, you'd say nude photos, who cares?
What, you want a picture of my dick?
Yeah, there's no such thing as the internet at this point. Hold on, who cares about my nude photos?
What's your number? I'll send you a picture of my dick
right now. This is Sleepwalkers. This is in the early 90s. Nobody has a dial-up connection.
Send. I'm following the trail of hats to find Waldo. Oh, no, it's Sam Raimi's dick. God damn it.
There it is.
Close. Why did I buy this book? So let's talk about the actual ending of this movie.
Okay, so this is the point where if you have not watched this movie, and if we have convinced you that you need to see this movie, we're going to ask you to please shut this off now and come back to us later when you're like, wait, that was the fucking ending? Yes, it was. So go watch that now and come back to us because we're about to spoil the fuck out of this ending because we got to fucking talk about this ending.
Let's do it.
So this ending. Holy shit.
Hey, by the way, welcome back for all of you who paused and went to watch the end of the movie.
Yeah, so I love that they're just like, hey, I've got an idea. And it's the most fucked up, straight out of NOM, fucking Predator-esque, fucking Scooby-Doo trap. Where these kids are like, we're going to, like, and there's like a 2-minute scene of them climbing a redwood. And you're like, what the fuck is going, when did this become a documentary?
Like, this tree's real high, man. I don't know what to do.
And they like tie shit up. And you're like, what the fuck are they doing? And then mom shows up.
Here's the thing. Remember when we said this movie tells you everything you need to know in, you know, the first however many minutes? The scene that is like slasher movie 101, where all the kids are gathered around the fire and they're telling the spooky legend. The spooky legend in this case of the woman whose uncle rapes her, gets her pregnant, and then she's committitted to a mental asylum, and then,
they take her baby away.
They take her baby away.
And she's committed to a mental asylum.
And then 18 years later, a man shows up at the mental asylum saying, you can't treat my mom that way, and he breaks her out, and he lets her live in the woods because she's fucked up, and he's fucked up, and all this other stuff. And this quickly devolves into a lot of sort of April Fool's Day, because again, it devolves into like a lot of like people playing tricks on each other as red herrings and fake out scares. And so you're kind of thinking that's all this movie really is. And that's why you don't stop and think about the fact that the killer is entirely the feral woman in the woods that was talked about in the story, which if you've watched any slashers at this point, as soon as they fucking gather around a campfire and tell a story, that's who you should be thinking the killer is immediately right there. It's the woman. It's the woman who's living in the woods.
Who is the mother of who?
Joey Pence.
That's right. The bus driver is the noble son who broke his mother out and has been stealing canned peaches and various things from the place he works to keep her fed. She's been, you know, killing stuff out there in the woods and hunting and living very feral on the land. And Joey Pantoliano tries desperately to steer this group away from going out to where his mom is.
Yeah.
Not because he doesn't want them to find his mother. That's a small part of it. But because he knows his mother's dangerous and will probably murder them, because at the end of the day, he's not a bad guy. He's a guy that loves his mother. His mother is fucked up. He's doing what he can. He's fucked up as a result. He's a total fucking nutcase. And he just wants his mom to not be trapped in that fucking insane asylum and treated like a goddamn animal.
If you go down in the woods today, you'll run into Norman Bates.
So they set up this death trap. She comes out of nowhere, attacks.
Well, okay, first of all, we have to underline the fact that from Jump Street, these people all think that the killer is Joe Pantoliano. So they rally all of their resources and all of, like we were talking about, making the best decisions possible with the information that they have.
Yeah.
Not choosing any of the stupid paths that most victims in a slasher movie do. Based on who they think the killer is, they set up a very elaborate, very effective trap for Joe Pantoliano that ends with a deliverance type scene of all of them. Not deliverance. Lord of the Flies, where they all just are getting together and stabbing Joe Pantoliano to death. And while they're all kind of celebrating their victory over him, they don't see this shrub just start to get up. And it's such an effective fucking scene, because she crawls out of the center of a tree, and you're like, what the fuck is that?
And you're like staring at that shot.
What the fuck is that?
Yeah. And then it just starts moving.
Yeah. And then she gets up and she takes down Zorich.
Yeah.
She just fucking cuts his Achilles tendon and he falls down dead off this tree. And suddenly it's like, oh, we had the wrong.
And hits a rock.
Oh my God.
And he's done. Zorich, the one guy who had his, he was on edge, but he had his shit together, fucking out, done.
Yeah. And then after that, the trap that they have been climbing the tree to set is sprung, and this crazy feral mother gets impaled on a log. Like she pissed off
a spiked log.
Like she pissed off the wrong Ewoks, and that thing just swings down and murders the fuck out of her.
And you know, and how in every movie you have that, oh, she's not really dead. No, she's dead.
No, she's
like
dead.
Like the movie cuts to credits and you're like, whoa, what the fuck was that last 7 minutes?
Yeah.
Holy shit, that last 7 minutes.
Yeah. And the whole time Joe Pantoliano is just like screaming for his mom, and it's just like, it's brutal, because like nobody's really I don't know if it's fair to say no one's at fault, but you're not hating on anyone for the decisions that they're making.
Right.
Including the killers. Like,
because the killer is this woman you feel bad for. She's not someone.
Story is awful.
It's not the campfire story where they murdered a bunch of people and went to an insane asylum and then broke out. It's a woman that was abused and was tortured and then finally fucking snapped and was then dealt with this terrible fucking mental asylum that just treated her awfully. And she is this broken shade of a woman that the only joy in her life is her son takes care of her and comes out and brings her peaches once a week or whenever he can. And she lives out there as this freak, and he wants to keep her isolated and doesn't want her anywhere near where people are so that she could just exist and be on her own and not be tortured. And for her to go nuts and kill people and then to die the way she did is so fucking heartbreaking, when he did everything he could in the first act of this movie to prevent all this from happening. As much as he is obnoxious, as much as he is crazy, he is so well-intentioned. And so, yeah, it's one of those movies where there's no real bad guy.
Yeah.
There's a menace. There's an antagonist. You know, there's a sub-antagonist. But dear Christ, this is a little rough.
To me, calling the mother character the villain of this movie is like calling the shark the villain of Jaws.
Right.
It doesn't really make sense.
No, that's why you have to use antagonist.
Yeah, because the shark is the only thing the shark knows is swimming and eating. The only thing this mother knows after her psychosis is killing. Like it's she's completely unbalanced, and it's not in the same way that a typical slasher antagonist is unbalanced and just gets off on killing. It's just, and the other thing I love about it is that she's so tactical. Like when you think about killers in the woods, like I love Jason Voorhees to death, and his knowledge of how to utilize, you know, different sporting goods and tools, like is second to none. But a hockey mask in the woods is not exactly tactical. A giant lumbering man-child in New Jersey forest is not tactical. This woman is fucking tactical. Like, she is, you know, camouflage. She's a hunter.
And in fact, that's the fucked up thing. When they go back and find the butchered camp counselors, they're not butchered for pleasure. They've been cut up for meat.
Yeah, again, the wrong turn thing coming into my head.
Yeah, the wrong turn slash Texas Chainsaw thing, because this is right in smack dab in the middle of both of them. That's what I love about this movie, is this movie has its inspirations, and it has its ideas that it's playing with. But it's very much a film that's saying, yes, but what if we did this smartly? What if we made something that is against the grain? And what happens when you make something truly against the grain at the wrong time? It vanishes like a fart in the wind. And that's what this is. This is jazz at the height of pop. This is a brilliantly put together piece of music that was just not what anyone wanted to listen to at the moment. And that is what breaks my heart about this movie and why I evangelize for this movie. Because where we are as a culture now, where we are as movie lovers now, I know that you guys that listen to this podcast love watching something that you have never fucking seen before and that catches you off guard. And that is what this movie is. And that's what I dig about this movie, is I had no idea that there was this movie sitting out there that was exactly what I wanted it to be at that time, that is so complicated in its morality, and that is so lean in its storytelling and so efficient at what it does, that the biggest flaw in the movie is us asking, hey, are they camp counselors? Are they working for the Forest Service? Are they convicts? We don't know. Because that doesn't even actually matter.
Right.
In terms of how efficient it is, it becomes a flaw, because everything else is so well done that it's like, why didn't you guys answer that simple question? And I would love to find out if there's an answer for that somewhere out there. But yeah, this is just an elegantly put together anti-slasher for people who love slashers of this era and think they've seen everything.
Yeah. And I want to give a special shout out to Shout Factory, because at the beginning of this movie, there's some text at the Blu-ray that I watched. There's not a good print of this movie anywhere. They actually had to reach out to several private collectors and piece together, like Frankenstein's monster, the best elements available from these various different prints to get something that was passable. So yeah, when you watch this Blu-ray, you're like, this doesn't look like Blu-ray. This looks really shoddy. This is a rescued movie. This movie is so obscure, it was rescued from the woods in and of itself.
And that's crazy, but it doesn't surprise me.
No, not at all, because no, I've never heard anyone talk about this movie. Until that Blu-ray hit, I was like, I've never heard of it.
And I don't know where it is available at this second. I know that it's been on Amazon Prime for years.
Oh, wow.
I know that Shudder's had it for years.
I feel like we should be sponsored by Shudder at this point.
I don't think we have enough listeners to be sponsored by Shudder at this point. We just
if you're out there,
we'll just keep pimping Shudder, because if you don't have Shudder and you listen to this podcast, you should have fucking Shudder. By the way, you know what? I'll do a strange little plug. By the way, I happen to know for a fact that if you go on Shudder right now and enter in the code Geek Nation, all caps, you will get a free month of Shudder and can see what the fuck we're talking about. And you can thank Adam and Joe of the Movie Crypt for that little thing.
Junk Food Cinema making money for everybody else.
By the way, I'll be perfectly honest. One of my problems with Shudder, I buy the yearly subscription. Every year I buy this is I
sounds
just,
like a problem with you.
I have just gone into my third year of buying the yearly. Well, because it's $4.99 a month, or it's $47.99 for a year. And it's like, I'm going to have this constantly. Will there be months I don't watch it? Sure. Are there going to be months I watch like 80 movies on it? Yes.
Again, we're not actually sponsored.
No, we're not.
It's going to be so hard to believe when people listen to this that we're not actually sponsored by Shudder.
But my problem with Shudder is that when you subscribe for a year rather than the month, it doesn't automatically re-up. So you have to, you expire, and then you go to watch a movie, and it's like, oh, I'm sorry, you're not a member. And it's like, what? I've been a fucking member. Oh, yeah. So I have to go and go on the computer and redo this again.
I'm such a loyal member. I even subscribe to the sister site that you can only watch on the toilet, and it's called Shitter. That's how loyal I am to Shudder, a program that, once again, does not sponsor this show.
So my thing expired, and so I go and put in my information, and I was like, oh, shit. I wonder if I can get a free month using Geek Nation, or if that doesn't work because I've already been a subscriber. Oh, look, I got a free month. So thanks, Adam and Joe, for the free month of Shudder.
It's a movie crypt, but it's not what you're listening to currently.
but you know what? When you're done with this and you're like, oh, I want to listen to the movie crypt.
Go fucking fine. All over, you know what? Go listen to the movie crypt. See if I care. No, it's a good show.
Or you know what? Track down my episode of the movie crypt. Because you could always do that and be like, I want to listen to Cargill, but I want to. There you go.
You know what? Fair enough.
It's the final countdown.
And that brings us to the junk food pairing, which...
I'm dying to hear what your pairing is this week.
So I wanted something that was a campfire dessert.
Really?
But at the same time, I wanted something involving peaches.
I figured you might.
And it turns out that one of the go-to campfire desserts are making fruit crisps in one of those... Have you ever seen... I know I'm going to set myself up for something awful by asking you this.
Oh, please. Wait, hold on. Let me steady myself.
Are you familiar with the concept of a Dutch oven? It is a small...
I'm a married man. I am very familiar with it. Honey, am I familiar with a Dutch oven?
She won't answer that. She's smart. She won't answer that. A Dutch oven in camping terms is a small cast iron, like stove pod where you can put things in it and you close it up and you hold it over the fire. You can make a really delicious peach crisp around a campfire that I think has to be the junk food pairing of this movie.
So you think the peach crisp Dutch oven is the, or Dutch oven peach crisp?
There have never been two words in my life that I have regretted saying more to you than Dutch oven. And that includes the fact that junk food is one word.
Can you do it with a Dutch rudder?
You can. You have to add a lot more cinnamon. Don't ask me why. It's just kind of a challenge.
It's the movie crypt.
We're the movie crypt. If you hate this show, we're the movie crypt.
I'm Joe, and he's Adam, and we had nothing to do with this.
We had nothing to do with
Adam.
Which is funny, because one of the things I thought about, I'm not even joking, one of the things I thought about of the killer in this movie is that her story was as sad and made her as empathetic as Victor Crowley. Like, no joke, I had that thought while watching this movie.
Yeah, no, that's one of the interesting things about this character and of Victor Crowley was, that they're tragic stories rather than just, hey, I'm a maniac and I like killing people. It's like, no, I have a really awful story that drove me to snap and become this terrible, awful thing.
Which is so much more tragic than, they were making love while that poor boy drowned, or I touched kids and then the parents killed me and I burned up.
You didn't actually touch kids in the first movie.
Or did I, and they just couldn't say it because it was the 80s and we didn't want to address the fact that child molestation was going. There's a lot of ways you can read that first movie. But,
yes. The intention of Wes Craven is that he was a child molester, not a child killer. So I accept that as headcanon.
There you go. And that was a legitimate connection to the movie crypt. Now I'm just excited about saying it.
You're
like
just really excited to say that.
Anyway, speaking of...
It's impossible to listen to that theme song and not sing along at the end.
I actually tweeted that the other day, that I was singing the song the other day, and I was like, what the fuck is that? Why is it stuck in my head? Oh, because it's a movie crypt's theme song. That's why it's stuck in my head.
I've been doing book signings recently, and so I've been, you know...
Oh, do you have a book?
I have a book, but that's not the story. The story is I've been driving to Dallas and Houston to do signings and appearances, and my wife, who normally goes with me, is just kind of like, you could go and fly this one solo, and it's like, okay, cool, and then I'm like, what am I going to do for 3.5 hours in the car and not talk to my wife? And it's like, oh, I guess I'll listen to my friend's podcast, and so I've been catching up on... I saved up a bunch of 80s all over and then listened to a whole mess of movie crypts. And so I now have this feeling of driving to Houston and Dallas of just kind of hanging out with all of my podcaster friends while doing it. And but yes, I've heard the movie crypt theme song so much this week in terms of those drives that it's kind of stuck in my head right now.
They're good shows. I'm not going to lie. They're very good shows.
They're
great shows. Speaking of great shows, if you would like to hear more of this show, which is...
That was a terrible segue. We're not a great show.
Junk Food Cinema. You can check out our back catalog on iTunes as well.
Who are these guys?
The venerable Dick Miller has said in no uncertain terms after spending an hour and a half with us, who are these guys? You can go back to iTunes.
God bless him for doing that.
God bless Dick Miller. And Blog Talk Radio's got our entire catalog, so you can check them out as well. You can find us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema and like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. Do not sleep on that Patreon, folks. That's all I'm going to say. Patreon.com/junkfoodcinema. Great time to become a patron. Lots of bonus content. We've been knocking around some ideas for some extra stuff that I'm super excited about. So definitely a good time to jump on that bandwagon. Carr Gill, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Massawyrm, M-A-S-S-A-W-Y-R-M. Or you can find my new book in stores wherever you buy books. Sea of Rust.
Say the whole title. See you,
no,
Rusty Trombones.
Fuck you. Fuck you, burn in hell, Brian Salisbury. I hope your kid turns out to like join the Mormon church or something. Ooh. Like that you have to like that's how bad it is. I hope that every Thanksgiving you get a lecture about how you're going to hell and how you need to join the church.
I do get a lecture. My wife's family's Catholic. I get a lecture every Thanksgiving about how I'm going to hell. Don't you worry about it.
I'm talking about by your own progeny.
No, that kid's on the right track. He watches monster movies with me. He loves it.
That's how it starts.
Funny story. I should have told this last week, but I was watching Hellraiser 2, and I was feeding him, and he has this thing where he'll just turn his head toward the TV and watch whatever I'm watching. So I had to put the burp rag like in front of his eyes because I didn't. I'm like, this is a little too gruesome for you. I know you'll never remember this, but
he has no idea what he's looking
at. Something
it's literally
about
just colors. And
something
shapes.
About letting you see this feels grimy to me. So I'm just gonna block your vision of it. He's on the right path for sure. So check out Sea of Dutch Ovens, written by C. Robert Cargill, in stores wherever you buy books. Come back next week for another horror title here on Schlocktober 2. And remember not to go in the woods because...
I love how you're like slowly burping out the beer you've been drinking heavily tonight.
It's the beer in me! It's an uphill battle, no you might not win. And if you get knocked down, you must begin again. Take every inch, don't give them, give an inch, you will take. And in the sky you win, the very back you break. You can't slow me. It's the movie crowd!